Hey everybody, welcome to Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. My name is Jay.
I'm Nick.
I'm Duck. Don't run straight. Get out of the way.
You need to be bobbing and weaving, man.
Yeah, I mean, everybody knows if you got to zigzag. Zigzag.
Zigzag. If someone's shooting an arrow at you, come on, use your head, kid. But, of course, Recon is the Jan Brady of the Game of Thrones. So, you know, he's always going, it's always Sansa, Sansa, Sansa. So now he's dead. So yes. I told you he was a throwaway character.
That's how they treated him on Game of Thrones. I know the internet world, or at least the book readers on the internet world, kind of, again, upset with the TV show for kind of just being so throwaway with some of these characters. Nick, do you feel the same way?
Yeah, I did. I mean, it's the same thing as I was saying last week. It just seems to me that they're cutting out any fat whatsoever of the story just to get to the end, because I know it's 2 seasons of 7 episodes, and it's like, okay, we don't really need Rickon. He's not in the end game, so let's just go ahead and get rid of him. And it seems that's what they're doing.
I think I said the last time he was on the show, we saw him, like, I forgot all about him.
Yeah.
So I didn't care. I'm just like... I'm like going, move to the side.
He's the last known male Stark.
Duck and cover, buddy. Well, you know, he's just as dumb as the rest of the Starks. They all deserve to die because they don't use their head.
I did enjoy that thing that Will put up on the message boards of the curse of Robert Baratheon. It's like in the very first episode of Game of Thrones, the people that Robert Baratheon touches. When he goes to Winterfell, all of them have died. It was Ned, Caitlin, Rob, and Rickon.
Oh, Rickon. Rickon is sticking. He's done. He's history.
I think it's Rickon's been stricken with a bow and arrow.
Rickon has been stricken with an arrow.
But yes.
Did Ramsay have a machine gun arrow? He got that second one off pretty. That last shot off pretty quick.
Well, you know, it's for suspense of the scene. But we have the penultimate episode here, episode 9, generally when things go crazy in the Game of Thrones verse. So we will be talking about this 69-minute episode jam-packed with a lot of stuff. It felt like a movie in a lot of time, a lot of parts of it. So we'll be talking about it here. Today, want to give a special thanks for Tim filling in for Action Jackson last week. It was actually a pretty respectable show last week, so thank you.
How was it? That's Tim. Good. Yes. So what are you trying to say? If when I'm here, it's...
No, I will say for both you and I, Jack, we're not very... we're not as well-versed, at least as Tim and Nick are. You guys did a great job.
So you say Tim and Nick are the bigger geeks.
Yeah, it might be next year. Maybe we just show up at like listener feedback time or something. I don't know. But
hey, whatever works, man.
But Nick, did you enjoy having a book reader with you, at least somebody else, so you're not so by yourself?
Well, yeah, I did. I thought that Tim's...
Even though it was Tim?
Yeah, that's true. But now Tim was great, and I did enjoy a little bit more of sparring because it was someone to agree with or not disagree with based on just book points and character, knowing the characters from the book versus knowing them from the show. And I did enjoy that back and forth.
Nice.
But you know, I enjoy talking to you guys too.
Did you miss Jack's stale witty repartee?
I did.
Well, you know, it's, you know why it's stale.
Duck!
You sit here for an hour waiting here for an hour to record because someone can't figure out how to work the equipment.
I blame Colleen.
I'm not calling anyone out, but it wasn't me or Nick. Or Nick or I.
I blame Colleen. Right? She recorded her new show, The Broadcast, and she was the last one to use the studio. And it was like a rat's nest in here. All these cables were everywhere. I'm like, geez Louise, come on now. Come on. Either way, though, we want to thank the people that make this show possible. That's our patrons over at Patreon. .com/JNJack. We have broken a threshold here that's kind of, we've been getting close to it, and we are past the $800 a month threshold, which is awesome. So we're less than 200 dollars away from our $1,000 goal, which we'll be doing a live Married Man show, which I guess now just we'll have like all the guest hosts on at once. It'll be a complete-ish show, as they say.
I guess so, yeah. That's a crowded podcast.
That's the ego overload right there.
All of them at the same time.
Well, to be fair, Dale's ego added up to your guys, the four of you guys combined. So
we have 132 patrons. Become our 133rd today. Go over to jandjack.com, click on the Become a Patron link, and there's different goals. Depending on what you contribute each month, there's different rewards that go along with that. Like at $5, there's an exclusive Patron's Choice podcast, as well as a Patron's Only Facebook page. At $15 a month, you get access to all of our archives. So a lot of great stuff. Definitely join up today. Also, we have a great partnership with Loot Crate over at lootcrate.com/JandJack. For less than $20, you get $45 worth of geeky goodness delivered to your door each day. Jack, what is this month's theme?
This one is a big one. Okay. This one, I'm going to spoil you guys out. This is a big one. It's the 1-1 pincushion. You will get the 1-1 pincushion to come to your... It's huge, too. So if you know someone out there likes to sew, this is the perfect gift for them.
The thing is, I would actually buy that if I saw it.
Oh, man. Go to lootcrate.com/JandJack and use promo code JandJack to get a special discount on your first month's order. All right, without any further ado, let's jump into this recap because we got a lot of good listener feedback. Excited for what happens to the book stays in the book. And so let's get this episode rolling. Nick, take it away.
All right. This is a very interesting episode because it's only in two locations the entire time. But we open up in Marine with the fire bombardment of the city by the Masters. And Dany and Tyrion are looking on. And Tyrion is kind of bashful and a little embarrassed. But then he kind of tries to sing a little optimism saying, things are looking up.
You know? It may not seem that way now.
Yeah, they don't seem that way. But, you know, it's like,
did it seem like they were taking a long time to make a decision? They kept getting bombed and bombed and bombed. The sea's getting bombed and bombed. They're like, well, you know. It just seemed like no one was making a decision.
She to me, I'm like, dragons, oh, it's gonna be
launch the dragons. Let's go. Get the dragons out there. But
it's true because she arrived at night.
And it's daytime.
Right. And here it is daytime. And that's what really doesn't make sense, aside from just storyline, is that any true leader or someone who has a dragon, why would you even land in the pyramid? Just go ahead and start burning the ships immediately as soon as you see them bombarding your city. But
it takes,
you know,
it takes away that dramatic scene with, you know, the towards the end. But I'm like, going, what are we waiting for? We have three dragons.
It paid off for the scene, but it was a little weird. Like, it just let's pace it up a little bit. Agree with you there, but at least it. At least Tyrion finally had a good acting partner to work
finally.
With here in the scene. Because
I don't know so much. Exactly. I'm not saying the acting. I'm saying he had something where the writing was important. I mean, was at least because the scenes he has with, you know, the others.
But again,
it's not their acting. It's the fact that it's just dumb dialogue.
Yeah. Oh, we've been waiting this whole season for just this episode for her because really. It's all been just filler, aside from her getting the Dothraki. Everything that she's done this season has been pretty much pointless. And this was good to see this back, and Dany assuming the role as queen again, and then we'll get to it. But, yeah, I mean, it was a really good scene. I loved everything with Dany this episode. I thought it was a really well-written and well-executed acting and direction-wise, and CGI. It was great.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Like, CGI was fantastic. It was like, and I guess this episode cost $20 million to make.
Really?
Dang.
And I believe it because, like, just the caliber of everything, like the real life horses, all of the extras, and all the CGI work, like, it translated, I thought, really well on screen.
Is that coming out of the pay that HBO pays us for doing a Leftovers podcast?
Yeah. $0.
But yeah, Tyrion does say in his defense, you know, everything in Marine is successful now, and the reason why they're attacking us is because they can't allow Marine to be successful without slaves, because it's a threat to them. And then Danny, is like, yeah, that's good. So she goes, now I have a plan. And then she's going to crucify the masters, burn their ships, and then turn all their cities back to the dirt. And this is another thing that I thought was really brilliant, because you see the facial acting. You see the facial acting of Tyrion of disapproving, and you also see kind of what we've talked about, Dany being just this conqueror. She's never really led, and that's what she wants to do. It's just that's all she knows how to do is just be strong and kill people that are in her way. And Tyrion says, no, like, you know exactly how your father was. He was nuts for doing this. He was going to kill all of his citizens. You can't do this. You can't kill the innocent and the loyal at the same time. And she listens. And that's what I liked about it, is that she is trying to be at least an open-minded queen.
Yeah.
And of course, so she says, okay, go ahead.
If she would have waited any longer, though, there wouldn't have been anybody left.
That's true.
It was nonstop. They're firing those things nonstop.
But again, to Nick's point, I thought it was it was a really good scene, because that's kind of one of
it was excellent scene.
The undertones of kind of Dan, at least this season, we kind of seen Dan. I was like, oh, she's got a little. We're seeing the Targaryen in her here a little bit, but it was. Do you see her eventually not listening to Tyrion, or do you see them continue to be a really good tandem? Going forward,
I would love it for it to be a good tandem, because you believe it's kind of like, you know, like president and vice president. You want to believe in this ticket, the winning ticket. But you almost kind of want to believe sometimes with that craziness in Danny's eyes of like, I'm in power, and the cockiness that she has from time to time, that she actually might be the anti-hero, you know, of I'm getting to Westeros. And what happens when you get to this Jon Snow moment, or other people who are in power in Westeros, and then she's still has this entitlement feeling of I'm a Targaryen, I should be the queen. Where is it going to go from there? Is she going to be this I'll burn you all to the ground person, or is she going to work with them? And you'd like to hope with Tyrion that they will see, because it's kind of like when he sees Theon later, he remembers him, he'll remember Jon Snow as well, and that might be the deal breaker between them.
She can't succeed without Tyrion. There's no way.
Right.
And we'll see.
But she's open to suggestion. And what we see here in this next scene is what I assumed is Tyrion's suggestion. So you see Dany meeting with the Masters, and the Masters are arrogant. You know, they're thinking that they've won the battle already, and they're here to accept Dany's surrender. So they give her these really harsh terms. You know, you're going to leave on foot, the Unsullied are going to turn to slavery, Missandei's going to return to slavery, and we're going to kill your dragons. And Danny's just like, no, that's not going to happen. We're here to discuss your surrender, not mine. And then they kind of, once again, like, your reign is over, it's our time. She's like, no, my reign has just begun. You know, and then awesomeness of, drops the mic. Enters Drogon, Dany mounts him, and she starts to fly over the town.
Well, that didn't sound right.
She mounted the dragon. That's a term.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was a 69-minute episode. Okay, let's move on.
All right. Okay.
We see the other two dragons, as she's flying over town, break out of their prison, their dungeon, and they join the ranks with Dany and Drogon. And then it returns to the ground below, and we see the Sons of Harpy once again killing the innocents or the freed slaves. But then the Dothraki army rides into town and begins to slaughter them.
Can I ask a question? Why did it take so long to send the army in?
Well, last week they were 7 days out and then got here pretty quick. So,
well, I'm just saying it. Just in time. Well, I'm sorry, about 100 people died, but that's okay.
It takes time. You're being too much of a cynic here.
I'm not being too much of a cynic. I'm just saying, hey, you know.
Anyway.
I got to fly around my dragon for a while, and, you know, why people are dying. Oh, okay, now we'll burn some ships down, okay?
But this is also, because I was wondering if there was going to be, when the dragons fly over the armada, is it going to be one of these sweep motions where they're just burning every ship in a row? Or is this also something Tyrion proposed? Yes. Of look, we need ships to go, so you just need to select one just to put the fear into their hearts. And that's exactly what Dany does. She picks one ship, and all three dragons burn it to the to it sinks, which was brilliant because now they do have an armada. We return now to the negotiating area where Grey Worm is addressing the masters. He first gives their slave soldiers a choice, like either fight for them or return to your homes. They abandon him. And then Tyrion, he thanks them for their fleet because they know they've won in this moment. All they did was burn one ship, and they've won the entire battle.
Which, again, it was smart because I was saying, don't waste all that. You need the ships. How are you going to get the ships? So I thought that was cool.
It is cool, yeah.
That was a good idea. That was a good plan, but it was Tyrion's plan.
Right. And going back to CGI, I think this CGI scene was better than the Battle of the Bastards, because you look at the scales on the dragon, how detailed it is. You look at the way that ship and the sails and everything just broke apart, and all the fire. It was just beautiful.
I thought it was real.
So Tyrion then basically says, "We made a pact and you violated it and declared war upon us. And our queen is forgiving, so only one of you will die." And it was one of those great, too, of just how greedy people are very selfish. And so they're pushing forward the low-born poor guy of their trio. And then Grey Worm walks up and kills the two selfish ones, which I thought was good. And then Tyrion, in a very cleverly way, now also Dany does not have to go and invade these cities anymore. He basically just says, you go back. You tell them whenever they feel like rebelling again or have dreams of conquering Backslaver's Bay, remind them what happened here today and that you're only alive by the mercy of Daenerys Stormborn. And it's just, ooh.
Oh, but it was cool. It was really good. And I think a lot of people were anticipating the Battle of the Bastards. But this was great. This was a really cool scene. And it might have been, too, just some relief that there was a lot of stuck in the hatch kind of sentiment or feeling with the Marine storyline and with Dany's storyline for a lot of the season. There's some really great parts, like where she kind of took over the Dothraki army, but then it was like, another few episodes of kind of repeating the same thing again, repeating the same thing with Tyrion, and now we kind of had a good resolve to all of that.
Right, and I mean, and not that I really want to defend the producers or the writers, but last season was the end of Dany's storyline as far as the books are concerned. And they've had to basically, they know the end story, but they had to do something that made logical sense for her. And yeah, there is a lot of filler, but they did get to a point of now Dany can, if she wants to, start sailing towards Westeros. I just, going on this season, I wonder if she'll get there in episode 2 of next season, but we'll see. That was a joke.
No, it was a good joke. It was a good joke.
Okay.
You guys didn't laugh at duck, but that's okay.
Well, I didn't get it. At first, I thought you were laying like duck as in like a quack, quack duck. I'm like, what's he talking about? And then I got it.
Shaking my head over here.
You should have done something more on the lines of Winston's line from Ghostbusters. When someone's shooting at you with an arrow, you duck.
Yeah.
That would have been better. Just saying.
Okay. All right. Okay. That's a big twink. That's a big Twinkie. Okay. I got it.
Uh-huh.
Why don't you worry about just producing the show and I'll do the jokes. Okay, Jake?
All right. Well, the next scene we go to is in the north, and Jon Snow and Sansa, along with Jon's inner circle, meet with Ramsay Bolton next to Winterfell. Ramsay kind of arrogantly thanks Jon for returning Sansa to him because that's what he demanded in his letter. And now Jon all has to do is dismount, kneel, surrender your army, proclaim me as Lord of Winterfell, the Warden of the North, and I'll pardon you. Which, do you really think he was pardoning him?
No.
Yeah. because I mean, but Ramsey is smart though. He's like, you don't have the numbers, what are you? There's no, you know, reason for you to fight here. Just go ahead and surrender. And John agrees. There's no reason to battle. Let's just end this the old way, which is I like that little extra old way. You know, like just you versus me. But I mean, Ramsey's too smart for that. I mean, and anybody would. No one, if you have a bigger army and you don't know anything about your opponent, you wouldn't just fight him hand to hand. So he says, no, I've got the numbers. I know I'm going to win. So no, we'll just fight each other in a battle. But Ramsey does throw in a little wild card there at the end. And he says, you know, if you're so willing to fight, are you really willing to let your little brother die over this? And then Sansa's like, you know, how do you know you have him? They throw out Summer's head. And then Sansa just cuts him off entirely, which is really, you know, you can see her becoming the strong character. And yes. She's just like, you know, you're gonna die tomorrow, Lord Bolton. Sleep well. And like the sleep well is almost kind of like an F you, just kind of like you're dead, man. And then he throws in a little bit about a little foreshadowing of my dogs are going to enjoy eating all of you. I haven't fed them for 7 days, which I thought was interesting because when Sansa later on says you haven't fed them for 7 days, you admitted that she already rode off on her horse. So how did she know that? I don't know if y'all picked that up.
No, I didn't.
No.
Oh. Yeah. Cause when she says sleep well, she turns her horse and rides off. And then is when he says, I haven't fed them for 7 days. So it's like, wow, she either got really good hearing or.
But, maybe she heard it on the internet or something.
Yeah.
Her Twitter the account. The Raven. Yeah, the Raven sent it to her.
The next scene, we go to the War Council meeting where John's talking with Davos, saying, you know, if he's smart, he'll just stay inside Winterfell. But Davos is a good advisor at this moment, and he does say, you know, the North is watching. He can't show weakness by staying within the walls. You know, he has to show that he is in control of the North, and if he does that, it'll show fear to all the lords that he was afraid of this smaller force. He didn't get into that, but that's what he's basically saying to him.
Right.
And then Tormund, which I loved this episode because he's kind of the comic relief in two mm-hmm. scenes. He says, I don't care about any of that. I'm fearful of the horses. And John explains, he was like, oh, don't worry, our flanks will be protected. And then Tormund's just looking at him like he's a stone. He goes, he won't be able to use a pincer move. Still nothing. He's like, he's not going to hit us from the sides. Oh, okay. But yeah, you can see a little bit of overconfidence as well in Jon Snow, because his plan, obviously, with a smaller force is to have a defensive strategy. And he wanted Ramsay charging with all of his forces towards them just to kind of a bottleneck, which does make sense because he says, I want them coming as full tilt. But the meeting is adjourned, and then Sansa finally speaks up, which I don't know why she didn't speak up during the meeting if she was so hell-bent on it. But she said, you know, you should have you've made your plans from one single conversation. You think you know him? No, like I've lived with him. He likes to hurt people. You should have consulted with me. Mm-hmm. Cause he's not going to fall into this trap you're going to set. And John does admit that he should have consulted her, but what should we do? Should we just let Rickon die? How are we going to get him back? And this is where at this point I'm thinking, why isn't she telling him about Littlefinger? Why isn't she saying I wrote Littlefinger? No, we have,
because it would ruin the ending.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the only logical thing is that, you know, like, but the producers think the viewers are really that dense that we forgot that she that
or you say, look, John, before we go meet with Ramsay, I got some more troops coming. We don't need it. We don't need to make these demands until the other troops come.
The whole time.
Or we can just use it as a surprise and Ramsay won't know it, but the viewers will know it.
Well,
the viewers already knew it.
A lot of people are making fun of it's been done a lot of times in Lord of the Rings, but the Eagles, you know, just coming in and kind of saving the day at the end, or in Helm's Deep where the army comes in and saves the day at the end. Like it's been done a lot of times, so I think a lot of people are just like, okay, when's Littlefinger going to show up? It's going to get to the point where they're almost lost, and then this other army is going to sweep in and save the day.
The only thing there was a little bit of doubt because Game of Thrones has killed off a lot of major characters.
It's true.
I kept waiting. I said, okay, when's he coming?
To me, it's like they weren't going to kill Jon Snow again. They weren't going to bring Jon Snow back just to kill him again.
I said that. I said the same thing. I said, there's no way they kill this guy back. Not this soon. You know, he was talking about, don't bring me back. Don't, you know, the whole thing. I go, anyway.
I found it interesting that, I guess, I'm skipping ahead to what the Red Priestess said. Sorry, go ahead. I'm jumping ahead. Go.
Okay. Well, yeah, but since we're already talking about Lord of the Rings, though, yeah, there's two definite moments I felt this felt like Lord of the Rings, and definitely that one where Littlefinger comes in, is like, okay, this feels like Helm's Deep, and then the part where Jon Snow's standing alone in the field with his sword, like all he had to do was turn around and go for Frodo.
Yes.
That's all he had to do.
It's like, you're right. It's like almost the same pacing. The way it's kind of getting a little slow-mo, a little bit of the sun behind him or whatever. Mm-hmm. Totally. For Frodo!
But, so, you know, John's saying, you know, we can't just give up on Rickon, and Sansa kind of, in a dark way, I felt, gave up on Rickon. You know, like, she says that, like, John's like, how can we get him back? And she's like, we can't, you know, because Rickon is Ned Stark's trueborn son. He is a greater threat to Ramsay than we are, because as long as he's alive, Ramsay will always be contested as the true Lord of the North. And that's what it felt a little dark to me, of like, because I'm always just a conspiracy theory nut of, okay, how does Sansa now benefit if Rickon dies or whatever? But that's what I was thinking. It's like, it's just strange. Well, but she does.
How long has it been?
Sorry, Jack, you broke up. What'd you say?
I mean, how long has it been since they've seen Rickon? How long has it been since they've seen him? Because I was surprised they even recognized him.
I would say it's more like Sansa knows. Like Sansa, like she has seen Ramsay to her point up close.
Oh, no.
She knows that Rickon's dead.
But I'm saying, how long has it been since they've seen him?
Five seasons. How many years?
Okay, so you lose touch with people. I'm just
blood's not blood at all. Like I haven't seen you in 4 years. You're dead to me anyway. So.
But even when John saw him, he's like, "Oh, that's my brother." Mm. Okay. After 4 years, that you change a lot in 4 years when you're young. So anyway,
heartless, Jack. Heartless.
Hey, someone's gonna be like Sansa. I agree. He's already dead.
Then she doubles down once again. I'm like, we need a larger force, John. And it's like, okay, here's another cue where you could say Littlefinger might be coming. it's one of those moments.
Just maybe.
And I don't know if it's one of those moments where she felt that she was being disrespected because she's not a military person and she didn't want to put all of her eggs in one basket and then let him down, or if it's going to be one of those moments later on next episode where John goes, why didn't you tell me about Littlefinger? And she goes, well, you didn't ask me. You know, like, why is the toast burnt or something? You know, or some weird argument that you get later and you regret, like, why did you remember that? And just disrespect. It just felt strange to me.
Yeah,
I agree.
She does say, and a weird moment there, I won't go back to Ramsay if we lose. And to me, it felt more like, I'll kill myself if we lose. That's what I felt she was saying.
Same.
But then John perceived it more as like, oh, you're going to be, I'll protect you. Don't worry about that. Have your safety. But I don't know. I just kind of felt she was threatening more like, I will kill myself if we lose.
Yep. I felt similar.
Okay. Then back to Davos and Tormund, and a nice little lighthearted conversation of, you know, Tormund is hoping that they'll win the day because these northern people have never seen the free folk fight. And then Tormund is wondering what Davos's motivation for fighting this is. And he goes, you probably want to avenge Stannis, right? And Davos is like, no. He goes, really? Stannis created it himself because he had demons whispering to him, foul things to him, and then Tormund just kind of stops in his tracks. He's like, oh, you saw these demons? And it's another comic relief. It's another comic relief moment because it's like he takes everything literally. He doesn't get that he's like, no. And he has to kind of explain it to him, they're not real. But and then he just kind of dismisses it, you know, and his Mance didn't have demons or he didn't listen to Red Witches, but I believed in him. I was wrong to believe in Mance the same way it's wrong for you to believe in Stannis.
Yep.
And he said, yeah, maybe it is a mistake that we believe in kings. And it's one of those really good lines I felt too, because like of kind of foreshadowing maybe Jon might be a king in the future because, you know, kings are not always born, they're just made. And they say Jon Snow isn't a king. So Davos and the Free Folk both believe in Jon just because he's a good man.
Yep.
And then Davos just says, I'm going for a walk.
Could that also maybe kind of be foreshadowing to if Jon's not a king, that he'll be more in service to Dany whenever that happens? Or what do you think?
I don't know. I know that George R. Martin has promised that his ending is bittersweet, so I'm fully expecting either Jon Snow or Dany or somebody that, you know, the audience is not going to be completely happy. I think someone is going to die, and I think it's kind of shown that Jon doesn't really want to be a leader. You know, he kind of was that already as the Night's Watch commander, mm-hmm. and he got stabbed for it. And I really think once he feels the world is back to itself, he might even go a Frodo route and just kind of vanish into nothing, or just let the world be,
or go back and
be
like
once the White Walker
watch.
Well, he could, but like it could even be the same as what Melisandre was saying to him. Maybe once the Lord of Light is done with you, then you'll die. You know, that's not exactly what she said, but kind of that same thing is like right. Maybe you're only here for this short time, just until his purpose for you is done.
Yep.
So I could totally see that happening. Okay, and then Davos walks off, you know, to walk all night before the battle. And then now we're here now. So you see Jon Snow visits Melisandre, and he asks advice. And this conversation to me felt like she's lost kind of her focus because she just kind of smartly says, don't lose to your yeah. advice. And... which is good advice. But John then says, you know, if I should die, don't bring me back, which I could totally understand that because, I mean, it's got to be freaky. But she does reply, I have to try because I do what the Lord of Light commands me to do. And if he wants you here, then you're going to be here.
But didn't he say, I command you not to?
Yeah, I command you, but she's I serve him. I don't serve you, the Lord of Light. So I'm here because his will, Light's will, brings me here, not because you're, you know, my commander. You're not.
So he should have just killed her right there, just chopped her in half. And...
that's next episode.
Okay. Spoiler.
And he goes, how do you know this? And she kind of, and that's like, it's another kind of good, and I'm assuming that this is what they're telling her in the script, but you see it. She's kind of shakily says it, like, you know, I interpret his signs and the best I can. She says that after a pause. It's like, so she's kind of saying it to him that I don't always know what he's trying to tell me to do.
Well, Stannis would agree with that.
Absolutely. And I'm sure Shireen would too.
Yeah.
you know, she goes, I have no power, but the Lord of Light gave me you. And exactly what I just said, maybe, you know, you're just a small part, but you're here. Man, I, you know.
And then she said, you want to see me without my necklace?
Nope.
Yeah. But and then the next little bit, we see Davos out on his walk, and he comes to a fire pit, an old fire pit, and he notices the small wooden deer that he carved for Shireen. Picks it up. And you can see it in his face. He knows that she was burned. And he knows he's behind it. But what I liked about this was not just his face and the fact that he knows. I actually liked the wide shot of him standing almost like, and you had this snow, but you had this colorful sky background behind him, and it was just kind of those moments of like vengeance.
Great scene.
We return to Marine, and you see, and I thought this was another excellent just little opening to the scene, because you see Tyrion's face saying, the last time we saw each other was Winterfell. And immediately you're like, who the heck's he talking to?
Right.
And he goes, you were making jokes about my height. and then all of a sudden it zooms out, and then you see Theon and Yara there, and like, oh, the Ironborn have gotten there. And they've managed to go halfway across the world in a few days, but whatever. We've covered this.
The wind was to their back. It's so hard to understand.
Yeah. This is actually one of those moments where I was glad that they're there, but I felt, probably from budget reasons, or I kind of felt it would have been cooler if the Ironborn would have arrived to help bombard the ships and fight against them. But it also makes sense from Danny's point of view of like, I need all these ships, so let's not have the Ironborn destroy the other half of the fleet.
Agreed.
Yeah. Theon, though, in his defense of his joking, goes, that was a long time ago. And Tyrion's not letting up, because you can kind of see he despises him a little bit. He's like, yes, and how have those years been going for you since then? Not so well. I can't imagine you burning those Stark boys if everything was going well for you.
I didn't do it.
He does admit it, though. He does admit it, though.
There were some other kids that wasn't the Starks.
Yeah. He does admit he didn't murder the Stark boys, but I've done worse than that.
Yeah. I like Tyrion says, you're using the same five jokes everybody always uses. You have nothing new here.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's more reference to what he said back in the first season.
Right, I know. Yeah.
I think it was more of a Tyrion's way of rubbing it in that I have power and you don't in the situation, because you thought you were such an arrogant kid because you were highborn, and then I was just some lowly dwarf. So now I'm not.
I think he finished it with neener, neener, neener.
Well, at least it gave Tyrion another good scene. So
exactly.
That was good.
That's what I mean. If this episode was just the Dany stuff, it still would have been a good episode. Or just the North stuff. I mean, it was really a really full, well-rounded episode.
It was.
I didn't have any complaints with it, really. So Dany then begins to speak, says, you brought me 100 ships from the Iron Islands. In exchange, I suppose you want me to support your claim that you rule over the Iron Islands. And she's looking at Theon. And he shakily says, it's not my claim. I'm not fit to rule. And then, of course, once again, Tyrion's like, I agree with that. dang, can't catch a break. And then she looks at Yara and is like, has the Iron Islands ever had a queen? And that's what's great. You know, I've already seen this a lot online. It's a really a woman power episode, because you have this strong Sansa character in this episode, and now we have Dany and Yara both being very strong women in this episode.
Yes.
And she says, no, the Iron Islands have never had a queen, no more than Westeros has had a queen. And then Dany gives this little wicked smile of approval towards Yara. And then Theon speaks up again, says, our uncle Euron returned, murdered our father, and has now taken control of the Salt Throne, and he would have murdered us if we had escaped. But then Dany kind of jabs him a bit, says, I heard your father was a terrible gang. And then that's me. And then Yara comes back over the top and says, which you really wouldn't want to say to a queen with dragons, but she goes, yes, we have that in common. Both of our fathers are horrible.
Yep.
But then she looks at Tyrion, though, so she is taking the deal seriously. She says, will their ships be enough? And then he says, with the combination of the slavers' ships and the Ironborn, it should be, but just barely. But then he does question Theon. He's like, I thought the Iron Fleet had more than 100 ships. And he says, yes, our uncle is building more because he plans on offering them to you. But there's a condition. His big member. but he says, now he wants to marry you. But, you know, Tyrion does come over. He says, but once he gets what he wants, he'll murder you and take the Seven Kingdoms. And so it's enough for Dany and Tyrion to see the wisdom in their case. And he says, don't you want the Seven Kingdoms for yourself? He says, no, all we want is the Iron Islands back. You took them from us. Let us have them back. And then this is another good example of Danny ruling and not saying anything really specific. And you'd like to think, and this could be her own wisdom here, though, because she doesn't necessarily say, I'm going to give you the Iron Islands. She says, our fathers were evil, and they left the world worse than when they got it. We're going to make the world better than what we found it. So you're going to support my claim to the Seven Kingdoms, but you're going to also respect the integrity of the Seven Kingdoms. So this could be a couple of things. It could be, I'm going to let you rule the Iron Islands, but I'm still going to oversee you. Or like a, maybe like a state kind of thing. You know, like she will be the president, but you get to rule your kingdoms as you wish. But the one stipulation is you can no longer rape or raid other areas because we're going to respect the sovereignty of the Seven Kingdoms. Yara does object because that's our way of life. And then the queen just simply says, no more. And so she says, okay, no more. And that's it. So you do believe that there's a good alliance struck here.
Yeah, agreed. It's cool to see. And I love the girl power here. It was a fun scene.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And then on to the last big chunk. That's what's crazy when you only have four big chunks of an episode is you get through them pretty quick. We're back in the north, and the Bolton and the Stark armies are lined up. Ramsay slowly brings out Rickon tied up. And I do love the tension in this beginning part because I believe that Ramsay was just going to walk Rickon out and slit his throat and then just drop him dead there and then charge or something. But instead, he cuts the ropes. So you have a little bit of hope just before the sick part comes out.
That's what Sansa was trying to tell Jon. Jon had a plan that they would attack. They would be attacked. Ramsay changed the whole game.
Right, exactly, and that's what I'm saying. It's brilliant, yeah. Because you can even see it, like, okay, so he tells Rickon to run, and it begins to shoot the arrows at him. You know, run to your brother. And Jon sees what's going to happen, so he runs out with his horse to try to rescue him, but the last arrow, as we said, hits Rickon, kills him. And you see it in Tormund's face, you know, he says, don't fall for it, and that's exactly what Jon does. He falls for Ramsay's trap. And just begins to run his horse on a suicide mission into a volley of arrows. And this is the first incident of you kind of want to believe that the Lord of Light also was protecting Jon because he's running into a volley of arrows and his horse gets hit, but he doesn't get struck one time. Then Tormund calls for the charge, and as same thing as Ramsay calls for the charge from his troops to the cavalry. They go in, they meet just in time for Jon not to get killed. So this is the second time Jon.
I was saying the whole time, I was like, he's dead. What are you doing?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay. So the battle begins and they're fighting and it seems pretty even at this point. But then Ramsay, like in Braveheart, with the king, orders his archers to start firing volleys into his own troops and into the Stark men. Let's see here where I'm at. Okay, so the battle continues and continues, and then Davos sees that their numbers start to dwindle, so then he orders the reinforcements to charge in along with One-One the Giant. Ramsay sees this as well, so he orders his reinforcements to charge as well, but the difference is that he has the numbers at this point. The Ramsay troops surround in a half crescent formation with shields, very Roman infantry style. And then the Umbers attack from the rear of the troops. So they basically have them encircled with no way out. And you can see like the tension. I love this whole scene because the tension of the spears closing them in, very claustrophobic, and the panic that are in the wildlings because they're just being butchered. Ugh. And you even see Torment there same thing.
Did you get to the part where, do we skip the part where Jon Snow is buried in bodies?
No.
No, we're getting there.
Oh, we're not there yet? Okay. I apologize.
Yeah. No. I mean, interrupt and put your own comments in whenever you wish.
Well, the best part of the scene. No.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm there now, basically. You see Tormund, even him start to panic. Like he goes to himself, attacks a shield guy, and he pays the price for it because he does kill the guy. But then as soon as he gets through the line, they whack him with a sword in his arm and it wounds him right. deeply. Yeah. And then he just says, basically, heck with this, turns around, and the wildlings start to begin to attack the rear, which is where the Umbers are because they don't have shields, which they feel that's their only way out. And this is where Jon Snow is. And exactly, he's about to take on small Jon Umber. And then he just gets mowed down by the wildlings charging out. And exactly, Jack, if you want to talk, go ahead. But yeah, like this was just, I mean, me, I have a little bit of claustrophobia. I mean, this was just tense upon tension.
Someone posted on our Facebook page how claustrophobic, and it felt that way for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, I said, oh, it was so well done that I believed. I was like, all right, breathe, John. It was just crazy. Yeah.
But I liked how it just it felt like that old time war, right? It's just like just so many bodies and just so, like just mountains of just dead bodies. It's just such a brutal, brutal, brutal war.
Now the spears they had, were they made out of, I mean, the tips are metal, but were the shafts wood?
Yeah.
Couldn't they just
look wood to me?
Couldn't they just break them with their swords?
But if you looked at the way the troops...
Go ahead. Sorry.
If you looked at the way the troops were organized, you know, you had one guy holding a shield with a sword in hand. Spears were very long, two guys behind him. So I'm sure they had reserved spears just to, if one broke, you just replace it with another.
Okay. I'm just saying that would have been my option right there. Okay, I could get stabbed, or I could just at least try and break their shafts off.
Mm-hmm.
I know that didn't sound
did
right.
Did I say this episode was 69 minutes long? Did I say that?
Yeah.
It's just a fact.
So
it's a fact.
You Lorena Bobbitt. That's all I'm
saying. I don't know if our younger viewers will quite get that reference, but
okay. They can Google it.
But yeah, like, you know, if anyone, you'd like to think if you were in a war, you would die heroically.
Right.
And the fact that John was in the mud being trampled by dozens of soldiers, like, I couldn't help but think, God, I would not want to die that way. Like, you fought so bravely to only be killed by being drowned in the mud.
I said, there's no way they killed Jon Snow off this way. There's no way he dies this way. That would just be like, come on. I mean, people would be upset that he would if he were, but to die that way, it's no way. Like you're saying, he has to die a hero's death.
So here's a question I have: is it almost? Yes, we love that Jon Snow came back, but is it almost kind of ruin a lot of the suspense now? Because it's like, well, they brought Jon back, so they're not just going to kill him again. He's not going to die. So now we feel this like false sense of like security. That now I feel like somebody else is going to have to die to take it away from us.
Well, I think that a lot of that Melisandre scene was to take away some of that feeling of John might die, because he tells her, like, don't bring me back. So you have that possibility of John might die, even though it's very remote.
And what was Wan waiting for? He's standing there, he can see. He couldn't just jump up and slam on top of the people or something. I mean, he just kept waiting there. I go, what are you waiting for?
He
ripped the guy in half.
Yeah.
But it took him a while to decide what to do. I said, just start beating the crap out of him. What are you waiting for? Watch the scene again. He's just standing there, kind of backing up with the rest of them. He could see over them. He could see what. Okay, they're like eight deep. If I jump over here and I kick a few of them, I can make a path here for the rest of us. But not one.
No, he was trying.
He's a pincushion. He's a pincushion.
He is a pincushion. But if you watch the beginning
of it,
which
is the exclusive of Loot Crate,
where they could...
trademark copyright pending.
Anyway. I that was my first thought. I could see him. I go, what are you waiting for? Start kicking these guys out of the way. But it's just me.
Okay. we see Tormund, though, fighting with small John Umber. And actually, the Umber is pretty much killing Tormund at this time. And right. Luckily, though, at this scene, and same as with John being buried, you hear a horn out of nowhere, which is exactly like Lord of the Rings. You're like, okay, you know, it's the elves. They're here. Or all we needed was some eagles.
Yes.
And we'd be perfect.
Spoiler.
The book came out in 1955. Hopefully they know.
Right? Yeah.
I don't. I don't.
Well, then it's your fault.
Eagles.
That's my
fault. But yeah, Littlefinger and the Knights of the Vale arrive, though, and surround Ramsay's army and start to destroy it. And as this is a distraction, you see John able to get up, and you see Tormund as well beat into small John Umber's neck and basically just like headbutt him, and you're just like, ah, you're dead.
And he's a pirate now,
basically. But you know, it gives me hope for the Brienne
there you go.
Tormund relationship. It's like, yes, it's gonna happen. No. So Ramsay's looking on. He knows now that his army is defeated. And instead of facing the music, he retreats to Winterfell. And he believes that he's safe behind his walls. But then out of nowhere, 1-1 comes in and just crushes the door down. And sadly, as Jack has pointed out, becomes a pincushion. Yeah. And, you know, you think that, he's got, you know, just let him die in peace. He's already got, 30 arrows in him. And then Ramsay, yeah. And then Ramsay just, to add insult to injury, just fires one right in his eyeball and finishes him off. And which basically just, I mean, if killing Rickon wasn't enough to make John mad, Ramsay then, you know,
well,
like,
can I say something, though?
Go ahead.
Shouldn't Ramsay have just shot Jon Snow when he was standing there?
He really should have. He was smart about it.
I mean, who are you ticked off at? 1-1 or Jon Snow, who's just standing there?
But again, Ramsay's all about the mind.
Well, if he kills Jon Snow, that's a pretty good mind game. Okay, boom, your leader's gone.
But I think he'd rather just torment Jon Snow.
But he's a sicko. And he probably already knew at that point, because the gate's down, that the wildlings are going to rush in anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
Because the game was up. But he does accept, finally, John's proposal of one-on-one combat. And John picks up a shield. Doesn't even have the sword, which is just ballsy. Takes 3 arrows in the shield and then proceeds to beat the living crap out of Ramsay Bolton.
That was nice. Everyone was cheering that scene, right?
Absolutely. Hit him again!
I was enjoying it, but I was just I'd rather
actually see
chop off his toes and his fingers and his member. Lorena Bobbitt, look it up. You know, just give a little more torture.
But you even see it, like Ramsay, even at the end right there, he's even smiling while John is beating his face in. He's like, he's enjoying pain.
Right.
And I was like, that just shows just how sick he was.
Yeah, he's very sick.
Okay. And then the only reason why John stopped, I felt, was because Sansa is standing there watching him do it. And it was one of those moments where it was like, okay, why did John stop? Is he going to let Sansa get revenge or what? Because there's really no reason to let him live.
That's when John said, hey, Sansa, the dogs are really hungry. They haven't eaten in 7 days. But you messed that part.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah. So the scene ends, and then we, for a lot of happy people, we see the Bolton banners drop, and the Stark banners once again fly above Winterfell. And this was interesting. I really felt Davos was just going to go up and kill Melisandre, but
right.
You know, you see him just kind of standing there, like just smothering, or just guy just mad, just looking at her, just burning his eyes into her back, and just like, so you know something is going to happen next episode with this.
Oh yeah.
But I'm also kind of curious, who's going to die? You know, like what happens if Davos dies? Because she's a crafty person, but we've shown now that Melisandre's purpose has kind of ended, right. But Davos as well, in a way, because he's done his job with consulting John, but doesn't
John still need him?
He does still need him, but it's also one of those kind of things in my head where it's like, if Davos died right now, it's okay because his character motivation is pretty much done, aside from being just an advisor.
Okay.
So it's one of those things where either one could kind of go. You don't know.
Or both,
yeah. And then John orders that Rickon's body be buried in the crypt next to his dad. And then Sansa inquires about Ramsay's location, which I don't see how within just a few minutes she didn't seem a bit drug off, but I don't know. So it opens back up, and we see Ramsay tied up in a dungeon. And I just assumed, like everybody else, it probably was in a dungeon in Winterfell, and that was it. You don't really realize where he's at until it kind of pans out a little bit more. And Sansa is watching him. And Ramsay kind of just like, oh, my wife and all this, you know, you can't kill me. Another example of Sansa changing, I felt, because she says it very coldly, just like, you know, your name is going to disappear. Your house will disappear. All memory of you will disappear. And then this is where it zooms out and you see that he's not in a dungeon. He's in the dog kennels where he is, you know, let so many people die. And he kind of arrogantly is like, oh, my hounds will never hurt me, you know. And she's like, well, you haven't fed them for 7 days. And he's like, they're loyal. She goes, yeah, but now they're starving, you know. And so they just begin to eat him. And like, I thought that was just great because I mean, his dad's, you know, prophecy kind of became true. I mean, it didn't quite kill him like a mad dog, but his mad dogs killed him,
right?
So I did enjoy that little poetic justice in a way.
That was a nice scene,
yeah. But what I also liked was that as Sansa turns around and begins to walk out, you get this little wicked grin on her face of, I got mine. I got my revenge. And yeah, it's one of those things that it really makes me interested for what's going to happen, not just in this next episode, but in the next season. Because is she becoming this game player now? What's she going to do with Littlefinger? Is she going to marry Littlefinger? Is she going to use Littlefinger? What kind of strong woman is Sansa going to turn into?
Yep. Well, I see her like kind of taken. Well, could she take a Lady Stoneheart kind of place?
She could, but that's more of, I think Lady Stoneheart, I mean, we still could get Lady Stoneheart, but I think it's pretty much now not going to be put into the show. But
well, I guess it just sounds like a very tough, you know, Catelyn Stark kind of thing.
Yeah, that's true. But
does she go to try to claim the throne?
No, I don't think so. No. I think that she's going to just be the Lord of Winterfell, and that's pretty much for Sansa's storyline.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know where they're going to go with her storyline now, really, because this is not what happens in the books. But with the Lady Stoneheart motivation, it's really more for revenge against the Freys and Lannisters, which is down the Riverlands. And I really can't see Sansa now leading an army or at least a band of people down in the Riverlands just to kill a bunch of random people. Like she's going to be needed in the North now to put it back together.
Okay. But she's become so tough and, you know, forceful, eh? All right. I'm okay with it.
And it's a show of strong women. It's cool.
Yeah. 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 And that's the end of the episode.
Yeah. I really liked it, and I know there's some criticisms about some of the scenes or the battle or whatever, but it was a fun watch. And when the Stark banners came down on Winterfell, it was a nice, like, relieving feeling and a relieving scene. And it just overall, in terms of all the penultimate Game of Thrones episodes, I wouldn't put it, you know, on the top two or whatever, top three, but I still thought it was a really good episode.
I agree.
I was extremely entertained. I was on the edge of my seat. Like I said, you know, if you have those claustrophobic or any kind of emotional connection to an episode, it's automatically going to be a good episode.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, the only criticism I had, it was kind of like what you're saying. There's a couple of scenes in the battle, the CGI kind of, you can tell it's done between, on a green screen, or that it's a soldier being put in there because John basically, you couldn't do it with a person. But I mean, it's you really have to be nitpicky to really complain about that kind of thing.
I think a lot of people, I saw the biggest complaint was people thought it was predictable. And I said, yeah, maybe for most shows, but this is Game of Thrones. And so anything could happen. They could kill anybody. It ended pretty much how I thought it would. But at any point, I thought, well, I could be wrong, too. I remember the Red Wedding, so.
Oh, my favorite is like in season three or the beginning of season three, and people were asking, just non-book reader fans, like, what do you think is going to happen at the end of season three? And then they're like, oh, Robb Stark's going to go down and kill Cersei, and he's going to be the new king. And like all the people are like, ah, just laughing.
Silly people.
You're wrong. and those YouTube videos. Yeah, those YouTube videos are great, though. Oh, people are filming people's reaction.
They're excellent. Fantastic.
Well, that is what we thought about. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Nick's on a little bit of a delay because he's really slow internet. Go ahead, Nick. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. I was just saying I'm looking forward to the next episode, even though it's going to be hard to beat this one because you know it's going to be more Cersei and King's Landing probably centric.
Yeah, can Cersei die? Can that happen? Can she just blow herself up?
Does she die? We should take a vote right now.
Well,
yes or no?
We had another kind of hint and allusion to the Dragon's Fire hidden throughout, you know, beneath King's Landing. So, you know, is this the burning of King's Landing in this episode?
And that's what I'm betting on. I'm betting that Cersei lays waste to the Sept. King's Landing, she burns it all. And I wouldn't be surprised if Tommen dies in this episode, but I don't think Cersei's going to die one bit in this episode. There's still one thing left in the prophecy from the old witch that the audience has not been told yet, and I think that's going to be more of a next season kind of thing.
Yep. All right. We will see. All right, well, that is what we thought about this episode, and now it's time to hear what you guys thought about it. So let's go to some listener feedback, guys. What do you say?
Do it!
All right, here we go.
Listener feedback!
All right, it's listener feedback time. We have a few phone calls as well as a few emails to get into here. So we'll start off with the phone calls, and here is our first one.
Hey, just calling for the Game of Thrones podcast. This is Mike from Michigan again. I was the one with the crackpot theory about the comet being aliens, and Tim was making fun of me, and apparently I should have listened to Tropic Thunder and not gone full crackpot. You never go full crackpot, I guess. But I will say, when you were watching the credits and those lenses were flashing from up in space looking down at the planet, you're like, wait, there's those lenses? I don't know. I got to think about this. Anyway, great episode last night. I loved how Jon Snow was, like, invincible, and the show kept making it seem like he just gets surrounded by arrows, but, of course, none of them would hit him. For whatever reason, he's getting protected, which is kind of interesting to see. So, great show, guys. I just wanted to call and make it a full crackpot joke, and have a great day.
All right. Thank you for the call.
You can never be crackpot enough.
It's true, though, that would be almost a jumping the shark, I think, moment, though, if all of a sudden it peeled back and there's just some, you know, flying saucer up there watching this the entire time. You're like, what the heck? But it's true, though, about Jon Snow, though. I think there's like five times at least that I counted where Jon should have died. You have the arrows coming at him, killing the horse. You have the infantry coming at him. You have the other arrows that all hit around him but don't hit him. You have the guy charging on the horse about to take him out, then the other horse hits it, and then you have all the people stomping on him. So there's at least those five times where he should have died, or at least had some kind of death. And it's just crazy. Like, he was being protected.
I think you're right. I think he can't die until, like I said, until his whatever he's supposed to do is done.
So he is Gandalf the White.
It's true. It's very true. All right, let's get this next phone call here.
Hi, Nick. This is John from Fall River, Massachusetts. I'm just calling about last night's episode. So my issue was that it was all a little too predictable with the battle. There have been so many times where, you know, the battle's being lost and suddenly someone comes in to save the day. We saw it with the Two Towers at the Battle of Helm's Deep when Gandalf comes with Éomer and his troops. We saw it in Game of Thrones when Stannis was attacking King's Landing, and then Tywin Lannister shows up, and this sort of quote-unquote surprise with Littlefinger showing up with Knights of the Vale was so unsurprising because they telegraphed it episodes ago with Sansa and the Ravens. So, yeah, I kind of wish they'd done it in a way where it wasn't surprising. I thought it was just, it took away from, to me at least, from the enjoyment of it, because you kind of, I was just waiting for the battle to sort of end, or waiting for the knights to show up. Anyway, just thought I'd get your thoughts on that. Thanks, Nick. And notice how I did not mention Jay and Jack. Bye.
I love this new tradition.
I'm not answering this call. So.
Yeah. I love it. I'm getting the love now.
How could they have done it better? I mean, if they would have said, okay, because I was trying to think about it when I was watching last night. Okay, we didn't see that Sansa had sent the Raven off. And he just showed up. We're like, okay, he just shows up out of nowhere. Sansa goes, well, I told him. I mean, how could they have done this to make the scene work?
I guess it's more of the surprise of, like, okay, your army's already defeated, and then all of a sudden, whoa, now we win type of thing is what he's kind of more arguing against. Because, like, what it would have been cooler is – I guess that's kind of like the same way it was done in The Hobbit, the Battle of the Five Armies. But, like, you know, if you had all of his troops just show up, and then all of a sudden Ramsay, I mean, it's not the same ending, but what if the Knights of Vale would have showed up prior to the battle, though, and then it just would have knocked that smirk right off of Ramsay's face.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, now we've got you in a pincer move versus, you know, opposite of you thinking you have us, we now have you.
But at the end, it did wipe the smirk off his face because he thought he had won.
Mm-hmm.
And then they show up. But I like I said, the practical thing would have been for Sansa to say, look, I've sent for more troops. They're coming. Let's wait.
No,
that would have been as dramatic, though.
Or you could have even done like what John kind of predicted, or at least he said, you know, if these men of Ramsay's are being forced to fight. They don't want to fight. So if they sense any weakness, they might turn on him. That would have been a more interesting way, and it also would have predicted Ruse's prediction of if the people think you're a mad dog, then they'll turn on you and they'll treat you like one. So what if, you know, a small John Umber would have just stabbed Ramsay to the back, and that would have been the end of it?
Or if John after Rickon was killed, John challenges Ramsay again in front of all his troops.
Yeah, that would have been work too.
Yeah,
but I totally get the angst of people saying it's predictable, and because I didn't,
it was.
Yeah, we've already talked about it. It is. It's exactly like Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit, or it's been done.
Yeah,
you could have even had, like, if you've seen the old movie Zulu, you could have had that where, like, they got, they were in a circle, but, you know, they were more victorious.
Square. It definitely could have. Especially with the, kind of the emphasizing that Ramsay, it's always playing game, it could have been played a little bit to where your game didn't work, and it didn't have that response to it. Just it did have a very much kind of, you know, standard stereotypical.
Oh, it did. But the only thing that kept me guess off just a little bit was it's Game of Thrones. So I was thinking, okay, something could happen, but I was waiting for him the whole time too.
Yep. All right, let's jump into this next call here.
Hey, Nick. and Jay and Jack. Love the show, love the podcast. Just wanted to call in with some thoughts about this week's episode, The Battle of the Bastards. Here's my central idea. The Starks are the stupidest people in all of Westeros. You have Ned. He confronts Cersei about her kids being, you know, the children of incest and illegitimate. He gives her time to leave instead of, you know, taking care of business. Rob, pretty good battle tactician, but then he pulls a Cameron and marries the first girl who gets him laid, gets himself and his mom killed. Bran can't keep his hands off the frickin' weirwood tree roots. Rickon, who apparently never heard of running in a zigzag or serpentine pattern, just an idea. And then there's Arya, who didn't look like as much of a knucklehead as the rest of these people until she becomes the dumbest fugitive in the history of Bravos. Sansa. She gets upset in this episode that the War Council doesn't ask for her input, and she's mad because they don't have a big enough army. Then Jon literally says to her, "When will we have a larger force?" And she says nothing. She just looks away. And then there's Jon. Jon Snow. All these people are idiots, but he's the worst. He's the heir to the throne of the Kingdom of Idiots. Like, I've been rooting for Jon. I didn't really love Eaten or Resurrected Jon, but, you know, I'm on board. So they have this force. Like, as soon as they've got a plan, it's not a good plan, but it's a plan. And all that goes, like, right out the window as soon as he sees Rickon. He runs up there like a moron, doing exactly what Sansa told him not to do. What an idiot. I actually rooted for him to suffocate when he was under all those bodies and couldn't get out. I was actually like, I want him to kind of suffocate. This is terrible. Okay, so here's my question. Who in their right minds will follow the Starks as the Wardens of the North at this point? I mean, would anybody? I wouldn't. So here's my wish for next season. One, Sansa just gives in and marries Littlefinger and loses the veil. Done. Lady Mormont banishes Jon to Old Town because he's as useless as tits on a bull. And then she declares Dallas Warden of the North because he's the only person who is not a total moron. Anyway, love the podcast, y'all. Keep up the good work. Talk to you later. Bye.
I think that's like a call. Let's call it a day, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like a podcast with Tim again. I mean, he's absolutely dead on. It's true, though. It's like, Rick.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, it's like Rick from The Walking Dead. Like, ever since season one, I'm like, who follows this guy? He makes bad decision after bad decision.
Carl. He's 100% right. Correct. I mean, how do you argue this?
Yeah, you can't. Thanks for the call.
What did you think about his idea of like where to go from there or where to go from here? You know, whenever if a Stark can't really be a true or a good warden of the North, who's going to be the warden of the North? I like Lady Mormont. She's just take over, personally.
I'd vote for her. I mean, she had one job to do in this episode, and that was to smear into the camera when Ramsay Bolton says, "I'll forgive all of you," and she nailed it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So good. Oh man.
Child actors.
She's great. But now that's where Jon Snow needs Davos. He needs someone to make him become a leader, help him become a leader.
Yeah, it's true.
Right? Like he's saying, okay, your brother's just been killed, but do you charge 6,000 men by yourself?
He was more just trying to get Rickon. He's like, oh, wait, oh, crap, I kind of just got closer to this army. Well, I guess I'm here now.
I guess I better just...
And
how many horses died in this episode?
It's
PETA has to be really ticked off at this episode.
Yeah, that's what the CG is for. That's what the CG is for.
CG. Yeah.
But my main concern is how many giants had to die for this episode, because there's not too many of those.
At least one pincushion did.
Just one.
But yes.
Weren't there more than one? What happened to all of them?
What, giants?
Yeah, the giants.
Yeah, what happened to all of them? The White Walkers kill them?
Yeah, I've forgotten. It's in the history, the one that came out a couple years ago.
Okay.
And I think it's actually in the books, too. Like, there's very few left at this point in the world. Just they were killed off in other wars. And I know that at the Battle of the Wall, I think they had three. And the oldest one alive was the one who actually went through the door and was killed.
Okay.
But, yeah, there's not many left. And there's a really cool theory that even Bran warged into 1-1 at some point while, but, you know, you don't know yet.
Right.
All right, well, we have some emails here, so we'll jump into that. Actually, shame on me. People have been emailing our Game of Thrones podcast at gmail.com email and have not gone into it. So I apologize for that, but we will be reading from there from this point on. So if either Lost Podcast or this one, Game of Thrones podcast at gmail.com.
How many would have, like 1,000 of them?
No, but there's some in here. So I'm going to read them here now. This first one's up is Melisandre's Necklace. Long-time listener from the Lost Days. Question for you all. In Season 4, Episode 7, Mockingbird, Melisandre was shown in the bath without her necklace. Any idea why she didn't look old then? Does Jack have a crackpot theory? Ed in Arizona.
They hadn't got to that part in the book yet.
Plot hole.
Yeah, it's got to be a mistake. Or just, you know. They didn't think about it back then, right?
Right. Yeah.
Because none of it did you guys remember that?
Well, it all depends on your point of view.
How long did she have the necklace off before she became old? Was it instantaneously? She's in water.
From a certain perspective,
it doesn't work in water.
From a certain perspective, you could say that Darth Vader did kill Anakin Skywalker. So really, it's all just a matter of point of view. That's how you solve a plot hole. All right.
What I was going to say, though, is, you know, if Melisandre is in the bathtub, the last thing I'm looking at is if she's wearing the necklace or not. I'm not going to, you know.
Well, now I am.
It's like, wait a second. Okay. I can come in.
Well, maybe water. Maybe it's water protects the, maybe it's something with the water.
No, it's just a plot hole. Let's just call it what it
magic,
is.
It's magic water. It's like the Wicked Witch.
Is it Charlie water?
But
anyway, I think it's a good call out, but I think it's more a plot hole than anything more than that.
Yeah.
All right, got a last email here. It's Nick's Jetpack Issue. Hey, J-Jack and Nick. Love the podcast, but I disagree with Nick's Jetpack Issue. See the below question answered by Brian Cogman, writer of this season's Blood of My Blood and the Broken Man episodes during a recent Entertainment Weekly interview. Question. Feels like we're jumping between storylines that have very vastly different lengths of time passing between each scene. Answer. The timelines between the various storylines don't necessarily line up within a given episode. For instance, the Northern tour Jon and Sansa embark on would probably take a couple weeks, but Arya's storyline over the past few episodes only spans a few days. We realized a while ago that if we tied ourselves in knots trying to make all the story days line up between all the characters, the momentum would suffer. My argument is that George has hundreds of pages per book to tell a story, and what seems like a limited time. The writers only have 10 episodes per season, and they're trying to satisfy a modern TV audience that is known for being impatient, see Lost, but also trying to tell a competent story in a vast, fast world of TV production. I don't believe they're rushing the series. This season has more urgency because they're trying to strike while the iron is hot, like Breaking Bad did before the audience becomes disinterested. Breaking Bad moved much faster during the last season, but nailed the ending. Anyway, thanks for doing the podcast, and Nick is a great addition. Sorry for actually mentioning you in an email, but then disagreeing with you. Your initial joy must have turned to ashes in your mouth. John from Cheshire, England. P.S., are we sure those lads who killed Al Swearengen's people weren't posing as the Brotherhood without banners? I guess it was 7 days ago. Well, could have been. In a follow-up email, the area wave sequence was completely ridiculous. Nick, you can complain about that one. This was sent in after last episode.
Yeah. Did you guys? I didn't listen to the podcast. Did you guys like the last episode?
We had mixed reactions.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a mixed review. Mixed bag.
I didn't hate it, but it wasn't the best.
Right. We basically complained about Arya the whole time because hers was just, it felt like Terminator 2, and it just didn't make sense in a lot of practical ways.
She's good at fighting in the dark. I don't understand the problem.
Well, it was just, it was the whole setup, because it turned a really cool storyline into like a Danny storyline of like, cool, she's getting trained by assassins to do this stuff, yet she's not trained on anything except getting her butt kicked. and then she learns to fight in the dark, and that's her only skill from this, is to learn how to fight in the dark, and now she's leaving. It just made no sense. And then, of course, after kind of fully believing that the girl that was stabbed was not actually Arya, and then to only confirm that it was Arya, it was kind of like, what? It's like, it just didn't make sense, because like, she knows that she's in a group of assassins. Why would you just skip around a bridge and just be exposed? Because you know something's going to happen. It just didn't make sense.
Well, at least she was saved by an actor
who can magically save gut shots from a knife.
An actor or a psycho girlfriend who likes to stab her boyfriends and can heal you with a bowl of soup.
Yes. Well, luckily she dated a lot of bad guys.
But we won't recap too much. You can just listen to last week's podcast if you want to get a full detail of what we thought about that. It is time for the momentous occasion of any Game of Thrones with J-Jack and Nick episode, and that is what happens in the book stays in the book. It's where the book aficionado Nick is going to jump into this episode. How does it relate to what happens in the books? What differs from the books, and maybe some more mythology or context around what happened in the episode. We put it at the end of the episode in case you don't want to be spoiled about any of the book stuff, or if you feel maybe some of the book stuff can deter from your experience of watching the TV show. So you can skip now if you don't want to hear it. But without any further ado, Nick, take it away.
Sadly, we only have three little tidbits here.
That's okay.
We're getting at the end of the book stuff, so hopefully, George, please publish another book before next season so I have something to talk about.
I'll give him a call for you.
Hurry up, just for the benefit of the podcast. God, so selfish. Okay, so with the North stuff, well, not with all of it, but like, it's Stannis that actually, not John, that states that he doesn't fear Ramsay. Before the battle at Winterfell, it's Stannis that says this: "I don't fear Ramsay. I've defeated worse," because he's the one that's actually going to be at the battle at Winterfell.
Gotcha. Okay.
And then it's Theon that actually says, "You don't know him," because Theon is his prisoner at this point, and Stannis wants to know about his enemy instead of Sansa saying it. So that's two of the things that, in the books, it might be completely different, because Stannis could die at the Battle of the North, or it could be Ramsay. You don't know. And exactly, like, Theon is not with his sister. He's a prisoner of Stannis. So the story is still really up in the air when it comes to the North. And Meereen, she's never there. Theon and Yara never go to Meereen, but she never claims that raiding is our way of life as the Ironborn, because actually in her Kingsmoot, even though she didn't win it, she's actually saying that we need to make peace with the North. We need to be independent. We need to start just taking care of ourselves instead of living off other people. And then also the dragons, Rhaegal and Viseron, are not free yet. They're still in the dungeon in Meereen. And then lastly, in the North, Rickon is still missing. No one knows where he's at. No one cares, yeah. Davos is actually still on a mission to get him back, and it's unlikely that he'll end up as Ramsay's hostage, because the battle is about to happen anyway. So Rickon is perfectly safe. And then same as with Sansa. Sansa is still in the Vale with Littlefinger. So there's no connection there with Ramsay, and it's highly unlikely that Sansa will be the one to kill Ramsay. It's just kind of nice writing, poetic justice for the show.
And which isn't necessarily really needed from the book side, because she isn't the person that's kind of Ramsay's captive.
It's Jane. Yeah. It's Jane Poole, who is pretending to be Arya Stark.
I got a question for you, Nick.
Yeah.
We love Game of Thrones. We love the TV show, but do you think they should have waited until he was done with the books?
I really do.
Because now you're gonna have the book readers, I think, are going to be ticked off because there's things happening that didn't happen. You know, it looks like major scenes are going to happen, didn't happen. I guess the ending is going to probably be the way he wanted it. But what happens if he changes his mind?
He could change his mind. He could, I mean, because I'm sure he has to read fan theories out there. Because I know if I was a writer and I would read, because I've definitely read some really great fan theories out there. If I saw something that was better than what I was going to write, I'd be like, heck, I'm taking that idea.
He can also see how it's playing on TV. And if fans don't like the way it's, I don't like this direction it's going, he can go, okay, I'll just do it this way.
But I think if you start playing it that way, though, the book, it's already never going to get finished, but the series is never going to get finished because of like,
well, let me wait and see what they think. How many more books are there supposed to be? Two?
Yeah, but again, he's taking, you know, eons to get him done. So I get it from the TV show's perspective where, you know, where they're going to take like a 10-year break and then resume.
I'm saying, should they have waited until the books were finished before they launched? Obviously, it's been a huge hit for HBO, and we would be upset if we didn't have it.
But I think the show started, 6 years ago? So I think in their minds, like, well, we had, what, three books at the time?
5 years ago.
5 years ago? So, we had three books at the time or something?
When the show started, we only had four books. And then Dance with Dragons was released in June or July of 2011, just right after the first season ended. And then he kind of had hopes that he would have it, those two books done. But it's taken him an average of 5 years to write one book.
So has he made just so much money he just doesn't care anymore? Has he just lost his interest?
No, I think he's really interested in it, but it's a lot more timelines to keep organized. And also, he is such a nice guy, apparently. I mean, I've met him, but he doesn't say no to people. So when they ask him to appear at conventions or they ask him to go to book signings
or
have a good speech.
Or be on a podcast, maybe?
But, you know, he's only couple years started saying no.
He says no to us. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
How old is he?
He's, I think, in his 60s.
Get to the typewriter there.
That's another fantastic what happens in the book stays in the book segment. Even though it's a little bit short, that's okay. It's still very interesting just to kind of see how the book readers are responding to this, you know, going on the Reddits and whatnot and just seeing.
They're all pretty cranky. I don't know.
It's like whenever something happens on the internet, everybody's kind of cranky. It's just that seems to be what happens on the internet.
I just go with the flow. That's who I am.
Still a fun episode. Excited to see what happens on next week's episode. Again, I think we're all thinking it's the burning of the Shire or the raping of the Shire? What was that called?
The Shire? Oh,
yeah. It was at the end of Return of the King, right? They come back to the Shire and it's just like burnt down. So King's Landing might get burnt down. If you'd like to give us a call, you can do so at 385-309-0311.
Call anytime.
Call anytime.
Also, you can give us a call again at 385-309-0311. Call anytime.
Call
we love
anytime.
Your feedback.
We have questions, comments, and or theories.
Yes. Love hearing your guys' thoughts about the episode, so please call in. Also, send an email to gameofthronespodcast@gmail.com. It's Game of Thrones.
We may even read them.
@gmail.com. You can send them to Lost Podcast if that's easier for you. Also, we want to thank our patrons, especially Eckhart Richter, Tack from Tokyo, and Brad from Chicago for contributing a significant amount. And thank you to all 132 of our patrons. Again, very excited that we've crossed the $800 a month threshold. It's fantastic. And if you would like to become a patron today, you can do so by going to janejack.com. Click on the Become a Patron link. It'll take you to our patron page where you can see all the information about it and what you can do to help make these shows possible. Also on our janejack.com website, you can see a full thank you list for every single person that has been a patron. So again, thank you for everybody for making these shows possible. All right, well, that is it.
Wait, I'd like to thank Tim for helping us out last week, subbing for me, and I'd also like to help thank everyone who sent me and Jay well wishes on Facebook and other things. It was it helped. That's all I'm gonna say about that.
All right. Well, without any further ado, actually, I think with Tim, he did so well. I think we might have kind of kicked ourselves out of a job, Jack. But as long as people still have us.
Wait, me? I think it's more you that they'll want.
That's true. If there was one of the three, it'd probably be me. Then it would be like a 5-hour podcast. That
would
be the problem.
But who would start us an hour later?
I know, right? But you would record for 5 hours, so that would be only dropping. All right, guys. That is it for this week's episode. We'll see you guys next time for the finale of season 6 of Game of Thrones. Until then, hasta luego and goodbye.
Bye.